Okay, we're going to get this committee meeting started here. We do not yet have a quorum, so we'll wait on that, but we'd like to get started with Chair Anderson's bill, which is House File, this one, 3523. Chair Anderson, if you'd like to begin. Sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to just say I hope to be like a Don Williams today, a man of few words. My voice is leaving me, but keep going. Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce bill number 3523. And go ahead.
Oh, Chair Anderson moves House File 3523. Oh, we can't move it yet because there's no quorum. Why they usually put you in charge.
So we'll just talk about the bill and hope some more folks come.
Okay.
Well, as you members know, that Minnesota has long led the nation, actually, in promoting biofuels, and this is the next step or last step in the ramp-up of Minnesota. The biofuel has gone from 2% to 5%, 10% currently, and with this latest increase, we're going to be going to B20 for 6 months out of the year, the months April through September. Except this first year is going to start on May 1st, but usually it's going to be a six-month period of B20, then going back down to B5 for the winter months here in Minnesota. And we've had some good meetings, good discussions, and my concern was brought forward that ramping up from B5 to B20 is a big step. So the biofuels folks have agreed that and that's the reason for this bill, actually, that when the biofuel mandate goes from B5 to B20 on April 1st of every year, we're going to give them a two-week ramp-up period, the blenders and refiners and such, to get ramped up to that B20 level. Otherwise, they would have to start blending much earlier to reach that B20 figure on the first day of April. So a good compromise there. So what the bill does on page 2, lines 1 through 3, but I also have an amendment to work with that as well. So the bill language says 5%, but the amendment's going to say going from B10 to B20, which is what
Mr.
doing
Chair,
right now.
Yeah. We do have a quorum now, so we're going to bring this meeting to order. Would you like to move that amendment at this time? We're going to move the bill first, and then we'll
move on. I'd move that the House File 3523 be referred to the Committee of Commerce and Regulatory Reform.
Okay. Chair Anderson moves that this bill be referred to which committee again? Commerce. Thank you very much. And you do have. Would you like to move your amendment at this time?
Again, Mr. Chair, thank you. The amendment is the A1, and I was mentioning that we're going to have a ramp-up period as we go transition from B5 to B20. So what this amendment does on line 2.3, it changes 5% to 10%. 10% is what we're doing right now, so we just thought that was the logical step to go. So this ramp-up period is going to be going from B10 to B20 to allow the blenders and the refiners to get ramped up to B20 by the it says the 14th or 15th of April. So that's what the amendment does, Mr. Chair.
Any questions on the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Okay, you have your amendment moved. Chair Anderson, now to your bill.
Well, thanks again. That's pretty much what this bill does, except for one other thing, and this is something that's also been agreed upon by all parties involved. On page 3, line 17, there is also an exemption for number one diesel fuel. That was set to expire, I believe, next year. What this bill does is make that exemption permanent for number one diesel fuel. So, again, agreement by parties involved. So, really, Mr. Chair, members, two changes to this bill. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Do you have any testifiers?
I don't know. There may
is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify to this bill?
I
didn't see none.
I would like to have MPCA come down if they, I think they're here.
Okay.
But there are some other questions.
Okay, yeah, we'll move to questions after. Okay. Thank you for coming. Please state your name and begin with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Kirk Delka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And we're good with the bill, so I don't know if I need any testimony.
Okay, real good. That was short and sweet. Thank you very much. Okay, so to the questions, Representative Nornes.
Mr. Chair, just a basic, simple question. Has the price of the fuel changed with the change of the formula?
Representative, Chair.
That's a complicated question because there's also something known as RINs, which affects the price of biofuel, that type of thing. I think right now the rack price is within a penny or so of plain diesel fuel, so I don't anticipate maybe a penny or two, but that depends on market factors and the price of these renewable identification numbers that work with biofuel.
Representative Nornes?
Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none. Oh, there we go. Any final comments, Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just like to take a second here. The one piece that has been a little bit discussion prone, having to do with MPCA and the underground storage tanks. I'd just like to have a comment from Assistant Commissioner Kabelka on is it okay to store B-20 in these underground tanks?
Commissioner? Assistant Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for the question. And on the, regarding the MPCA's policy on this, there have been questions about MPCA and the what we would be doing looking at compatibility of fuel tanks and B-20. And we did send out to all interested parties a December 15th letter that states the MPCA will not be requiring owners to replace or retrofit dispensers or any other underground storage tank equipment for not being compatible with B-20 or less blends. And this is in alignment with EPA and the regulations there. There have been concerns about how biofuel compatibility in terms of B-20 would impact the petrol fund. For those that may not know, the petrol fund is a reimbursement program to help service station owners clean up spills, and they're eligible for up to 90% of those costs. And MPCA sent an email putting in writing to the petroleum marketers, but also the service station owners on March 12th that confirms our previous position that the MPCA would not recommend future reductions to the petrol fund board in regards to petrol fund reimbursements related to B-20 and underground storage tank systems. And this is a consistent position of the MPCA, and I thank the chair for our ability to make this known to everyone, and I appreciate that opportunity.
Thank you, Arthur. Representative Chair Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. And talking with folks, kind of surprised that the ASTM standards for biodiesel ranging from B6 to B20 are pretty much the same. So if the underground tanks and such are, we use the word compatible for B10, we're good to go. Or I know the word compatibility has been a little bit dicey to use, but you're saying they're okay now with B20.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we will not be checking for compatibility. A piece of equipment and whether or not it's compatible is a declaration made by the manufacturer that knows the product or a third-party testing certification group that does that. The agency doesn't have that knowledge to deem something compatible. What our ability to do is to check if folks are compatible, and that's what we said in these letters to be clear, is that we will not be doing that, and that's in line with EPA and how other states are progressing.
Okay. Anything else, Representative Anderson?
No, I think that
any other questions?
I thank the commissioner for those words, and we'll move on.
Thank you very much. Okay, Representative Anderson renews his motion that House File 3523, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Regulatory Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. Okay, the next bill on the agenda is House File 3719, Representative Hamilton. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Hamilton. And the next bill on the agenda is House File 3719. And I will move that bill, Chair Hamilton. So we refer this to the Committee on Ag Finance, House File 3719. So move ahead with your bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. If you remember, a few years ago, we established a bioincentive program, and we budgeted about $1.5 million a year for that program. For year 2017, we spent right around $30,000 of that money, and this year we spent so far about $60,000 of those dollars. And so they've been canceling back into the general fund. Now, talking with the Department of Agriculture, right now there is one recipient. However, there are a number of them that are ready to go. And I see that Ms. Place is shaking her head yes. And so the department is, I don't want to put words in their mouths, but they're cautioning me, raising some caution on whether or not or how much dollars are truly left available. However, one of the things that I did is I reached out to the forest industry and others and saying, what are some of the things that we could be looking at as far as to be able to foster and to grow different industries within the forest industry? And we came across some ideas, and this is why we're here before you. As far as the specifics around the funding, what we'd like to do is work with the department and others between this committee and the next stop. And so what I'd like to do is turn it over to our testifier right now, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, sir. Identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'm Mike Schultz. I'm the mill manager at Sappy's Mill in Cloquet, Minnesota. I've been at that mill since 1990 and have had the pleasure of serving as its mill manager for the last 10 years for the 700 employees that we have directly there. We are the largest wood consumer in the state. And as part of the forest products industry, one of the things that we're all forced to do is reinvent ourselves to stay viable as we go forward into the future. One of the things that we did at Cloquet in 2013 was to convert our mill into being able to make chemical cellulose, or dissolving pulp is another name for it. It goes into making rayon, into wet wipes, into even the screens on your cell phones, computer monitors, screwdriver handles. It goes into a myriad of products. But we made that conversion basically to be able to stay viable in the state. At that time, we had made essentially the decision to do that based on wood pricing that we were experiencing at that time, and considering how much the wood products industry has been decimated over the years, we assumed those wood prices would stay relatively stable. Those wood prices have gone up about 20% since that time, which then kind of makes us not as viable as we were at the time that we did the project. It was a $180 million project at Cloquet. One of the things that we're up against in Cloquet is if you spin the globe and you try to choose the absolute worst place you can put a dissolving wood pulp mill, it's got to be within 100 miles of Cloquet, Minnesota. So that's one of the things we're up against, because all of our product is exported, with the exception of one small consumer down in Mississippi. Other than that, everything else is export. So we have to, you know, go up against the transportation costs. We can still stay viable against transportation costs, but it takes 5 tons of wood to make a ton of our product. Having our wood price going up 20% certainly does not make us viable. On the split flat side of this, we have a large project in the works. We put in a pilot plant at our mill in South Africa. We are a global company. We put a pilot plant at a sister mill in South Africa to prove a concept of being able to extract sugars from wood as another byproduct of the process that we're making. That has significance to be a very large project. We actually put that pilot plant in to support the Cloquet mill. The only reason why it's in South Africa is because that's where our R&D facilities are for this process. If we are successful, which we believe we will be the first in the world to come up with a way to extract sugars from a process such as ours and enter into that market. But we're against two major hurdles for us is the wood price, as I said, and then also the fact that we have our sister mills in South Africa that could do it just as easily as we can. Fortunately for us, the products are in North America, or the market for the products would be in North America. That's a help to us. The other thing that we're working against is another competitor in Canada has announced plans to do the same thing. So now we're having a race. to see who can get there first, essentially, to serve this particular market. So that's kind of what we're up against. You know, we've been at Cloquet since 1898, and we really want to make sure that we have a long-term future for the facility. But, again, against some of these hurdles that we're up against, we're really concerned.
Thanks, Mr. Schultz. Very interesting testimony. Questions from members? Anybody in the audience? Oh, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hamilton. Maybe you went over it before, and I was just playing with that smartphone of mine, and I missed it. But this is an incentive program. It looks to be that you're making some substantial changes to it. How is this going to affect the dollars that we've allotted to that incentive program? I think I heard you say that we're sending money back to the general fund from it. Will we continue to do that with these changes, or are we going to have the chair of the Ag Committee, Ag Finance Committee, next year coming back saying we need to put more money into it?
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Mahoney. These are the conversations that we're currently having with the Department of Ag also. We want to make sure that we fulfill our obligations with the businesses or the industries that we've already that are already in the pipeline for this. And so the department is helping us figure out what the total incentives are going to be in the out years. So we're working on that currently. And the other thing that the department is working with us on is with the date changes, like you said, the substantial changes, what that means to the entire cost of the program. And so these are the things that we're having these conversations right now. We're working on these, and we're going to be taking those up in the next committee. You know, to answer your question, those finance questions right now, we are working on getting those additional answers for the next stop.
Follow-up, Representative.
Yeah, and again, I have to apologize. I was addressing something that's going to happen in a committee a little later. What's the next committee that this goes to?
Chair Hamilton.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, it would be the Agriculture Finance Committee.
Thank you.
Further questions? Again, anybody in the audience who would care to testify? If not, any final comments? Chair Hamilton?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you know, like I said, we wanted to reach out to the forest industry as well. They're very large economic drivers. There's no question about it. So I'd simply ask for your support so that we could work on the finance issues in the finance committee.
Thank you. I'll renew the motion that House File 3719 be re-referred to the Committee on Ag Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way. Thank you, Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Next up, House File 3121. And again, I'll move this House File 3121, and it would be moving from this committee to the Committee on Commerce. And good morning, Representative Neuberger.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. I'm Jim Neuberger, State Rep 15B, and I'm before you today here with House File 3121, hoping that we can move it to the Department of the Commerce Committee. Simply put, members, this bill pertains to the cottage food industry. As you know, we've made some really good strides in this industry over the years. Senator Dibble and I worked real hard on this year before last. This has been a really good bright spot in a lot of people's lives. Simply put, what we did in the past is we allowed folks to work from their homes. They can make safe foods, the safe food category. Cookies, brownies, that kind of thing, and then they can sell it to help supplement their income. There's basically two levels that you can qualify for. The first level is $1 to $5,000. That's kind of the entry level tier. that people are in, and then after you hit $5,001, you can go up to $18,000. That's more of a involved what we call tier two. Both of these tiers have safety provisions built in. You have to go through the Department of Ag. You have to take food safety and handling classes, and it's been a very it's been a real blessing for this state. So what we're trying to do here, members, is allow these folks who are going from tier one, once they sell more than $5,000 in 1 year of product, up to $18,000, to allow them to be, classify themselves as LLCs, limited liability companies, so that they are able to purchase liability insurance. That's a protective measure that we figured there was a tweak that we would have to build into this program. Just for your information, I do have the statistics here. Since we started the program, we've had about up to 2,400 new people get into the Tier 1 level, $1 to $5,000. We've only had about 100. We've got, had a grand total of under 300, though, over the last, since 2015, that have gone past that second tier. And what we're trying to do here, members, is just allow these folks to protect themselves. If you buy a product, let's say you buy a brand of flour, for example, that's bad, and you sell some cookies and someone gets sick and a lawsuit ensues, you get pulled into that lawsuit, you'd be able to protect yourself. Right now we offer this for people that have home-based businesses. If you have a computer repair shop in your basement or a photography studio in your garage, you can do that. But right now, if you are a cottage food provider, most of these are single women, or this is second income for women. If God forbid something happens with the product that you're selling, that you could lose your retirement, you could lose your home, you could lose everything. And this is the only industry that doesn't have the ability to protect themselves in this regard. Built into the bill, it basically says that if you want to be an LLC, if you want to, you must have $1 million in liability insurance. That's basically what the bill says. And with that, members, I'll be happy to stand for questions.
Representative, before we go any further, I want to thank you for negotiating and discussing this with you. I do have an amendment that reinstates the cap at $18,000. It's the A1 amendment, the H3121A1. Mm-hmm. And what that does, this current bill language strikes that $18,000 cap, and after discussions, negotiations, we felt it was best to keep that cap in place. So what this bill does is retain that cap of $18,000 for the folks on the Tier 2 level of cottage food. So any questions on my amendment? Seeing now all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. So now to your bill as amended, Representative Neuberger.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I got ahead of you. But suffice to say, that's the bill. If you want to go from Tier 1, which is over $5,000 a year in sales, up to $18,000, and you wish to have liability, if you wish to be an LLC, then you must have liability insurance. We spoke with the stakeholders in this. We had the cottage food ladies come up, and one of the guys come up, and they're good with this. They're the ones that asked for this. We had some meetings with some other stakeholders, and right now that's where we stand with this. So I really look forward to your support. Now, we knew we'd have to tweak a few things. We really came into a new area when we in 2015 when we brought this forward. We knew there'd be a couple of tweaks that would have to happen, and this is just one of those tweaks that came forward as things moved along. It's been a real blessing for people in this state. Now we just want to make sure that they can protect themselves.
Can you have a couple of testifiers?
Unless it's absolutely necessary. We want to be mindful of the committee's time.
Anybody in the committee who would care to pose a question? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a significant other that is a food safety nut.
Mm-hmm.
Love her dearly. but I hate it when she's looking over my shoulder and I'm cooking. So could you kind of go over, or maybe the department or whoever does whatever class about food safety, kind of tell me how this is going with their food safety and their food inspections? Are these folks getting inspected, or are they just taking a class and promising to be? So I think you know what I'm looking for.
Representative.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative Mahoney, I'll just take a brief run at this. Since we started in 2015, built into this was consumer protection from the get-go. We wanted to make sure that anyone that gets involved in this understands the basic principles of food safety. And when you decide to go into this, you go on to the when you register with the state on the Department of Ag's website, there is a food handling online program that you have to take. It's required. Everyone has to take that. And since we've started this, there have been no cases that I know of that have been reported of any problems. It's the built-in safety factor. As far as the inspections are concerned, the Department of Ag is, to my knowledge, able to inspect your home, your kitchen. If there's a problem, they can come in and inspect it. But they haven't, to my knowledge, there hasn't been any call for any inspections yet. I do want to be clear with you, Representative Mahoney. This was brought to me by the folks that are obeying the law. These are the ladies that are in this industry that said, you know what, we're obeying the law, we're putting out a safe product, we're jumping through all the hoops, and we want to make sure that we can protect ourselves, we don't lose our home because a flour company has a bad product, okay? The bigger concern that we have is that there's all kinds of people out there in the state that are doing this that are not obeying the law, they're not jumping through the hoops, and I hope they get caught. But this bill was brought forward by people that are wanting to obey the law. So as far as any documentable problems, there are none to my knowledge.
Follow-up, Representative Miller. Representative Miller has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question may have been spoken to earlier, so if that's the case, I apologize. But Representative Newberg, I just want to clarify. I'm going to call it the over 5,000, this class you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Are they required to have commercial kitchens?
Representative.
Mr. Chair, thank you. To my knowledge, no.
Okay. Not. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Clark Johnson.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to appreciate your. I want to state my appreciation for your work on this, Representative Neuberger. And I'm always curious about where some of these cottage industries go. I don't know if you're aware, but if you've ever had Boom Chicka Pop, that started as one of these industries, and now Boom Chicka Pop is sold across America and really has provided lots of jobs in the Mankato area. Do you have any data about other examples or other cottage industries that have taken the advantage to kind of build on their entrepreneurial spirit and take that important next step or next several steps towards becoming a full-fledged company?
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark Johnson. Thank you for your question. I don't have that data, but I do know that what the data does show us is that we've had this has really opened a door for folks, especially women that are on fixed incomes, to allow them to earn extra income. This has really opened a door for people. As far as making having been a segue for other industry, that I can't answer, but I do know that this has been a real blessing.
Representative Johnson.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just as a suggestion, I recall watching the Bastions were in a lecture years ago at Minnesota State Mankato, where they were talking about the biggest challenge they faced as they expanded from this small cottage industry to a larger firm was financing. And they were able to cobble together public financing and some private financing. So that may be the next direction this goes, but that's an important step. Mm-hmm. And they were really clear in thanking the various agencies that helped them with the public financing that helped them make a leap. And, again, now they employ hundreds of people across America.
Further questions, comments? Anybody in the audience who would care to comment on the bill? For or against? Okay. Seeing none. Representative, any final comments on your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Tomorrow, members don't eat breakfast because the cottage foods folks are going to be at the Capitol, and they bring all kinds of really yummy stuff. So I just be looking for them tomorrow. They're going to be here. It's Cottage Foods Day. And I just want to say thank you for your support, and I appreciate it.
So with that, I renew the motion to move along House File 3121, as amended, to be referred to the Committee of Commerce and Regulatory Reform. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way. Thanks, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Next up, House File 3150. Welcome to the Ag Committee, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
And I will move House File 3150. Representative Drazkowski, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 31 represents a bill that improves our noxious weed statutes, as well as improves the flexibility and the ability for farmers to mow their road ditches. We have noxious weed laws and statutes for both government units and for private landowners. Those private landowners found to be in violation of the noxious weed laws are regularly held accountable. As a matter of fact, members, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture says there's about 400 different actions on the local levels per year, realizing that we have about 1,700 or 1,800 townships in the state of Minnesota, 853 cities, and 87 counties. This has resulted in very low noxious weed pressures on private lands throughout our state. Conversely, we do not have that accountability and those measures in place for governmental units and the public lands that they manage. This is no more evident than it is in the rights of way along our state's public roadways. Many road ditches are teeming with almost continuous and dense populations of wild parsnip, Canada thistle, and leafy spurge. This bill helps to protect Minnesota farmers and landowners from governments that refuse to follow the state noxious weed law. It reinforces the importance of safety in the mission of our state's road system, and it provides landowners with the flexibility that they require in order to make those rights of way adjacent to their properties safe and free of noxious weeds. Members, the bill is in front of you. I do have, Mr. Chair, if I could, two oral amendments, or simple ones, that would clean up some oversight when I drafted the bill. Should I introduce it first, Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. The first section of the bill, Mr. Chair and members, takes a look at and reconditions the noxious weed statute to portion of the section of the noxious weed statute to insert the Commissioner of Transportation so that they are accountable as road authorities, just as our cities, townships, and counties currently are in law. Provides some clarifications, and then also provides a financial penalty to the road authority if they don't follow the law and do what the law tells them to do. And Mr. Chair, members, I don't have an amount of that fine prescribed yet, but that's Section 1. Section 2 covers road authorities and their authority to mow in the rights of way, and adjusts that, adds a section about bales, and those need to be removed, and says that if they don't follow the law there, they're subject to the same penalty that we saw in Section 1. Section 3, members, relates to adjacent landowners, landowners whose land either abut or is adjacent to a public roadway, outlines there in statute for them, and it carves out in statute for them their authority to take care of those road ditches, to keep them clean of noxious weeds, and to provide a hierarchy by which private people would be assigned the ability to mow those particular rights of way next to the road that goes by their home or by their farmstead. Thirdly, we've got a section, Section 4, provides some technical changes. Mr. Chair, actually, I'll be providing one of the oral amendments that I'd like to do is to strike the strike through on Section 3.21.
You mentioned a couple amendments, so now you're just focusing on one right now?
On one, if I could, which would be to remove the strike-through on line 3.21. That would be the first of two, Mr. Chair. And then the second one, Mr. Chair, that I'd like to accomplish, and if...
Let's just take one at a time here.
Okay.
So on page 3, line 21, you're moving orally to reinsert that language?
Yeah, I'm not moving it, Mr. Chair. I would hope that a member of the committee would, but I would urge a member of the committee to reinsert that language or unstrike the stricken language on line 3.21.
I will make that motion to reinsert the seven or eight words stricken from line 3.21. Any discussion on that oral amendment? Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drazkowski, I'd just like to know why you think that's a good idea to change the bill.
Representative.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, that was not intended when we drafted the bill.
So a typographical error. Seeing no other questions, all in favor of the oral amendment on line 3.21, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion's approved, and that amendment has been granted. Representative.
Mr. Chair, I would also ask if there might be a member of the committee that would be willing, through an oral amendment, to delete lines 3.3, 3.4, and 3.5.
Again, page 3, we're looking at lines 3.3, 3.4, and 3.5. So, in essence, deleting that entire paragraph and... good question. Reasoning behind that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. It's an awkward paragraph, and I thought to remove the awkwardness from that portion of the bill would be a smart thing to do after some feedback I got from some folks.
Okay. Again, I will move to a question from Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Representative Anderson. Is that just a technical idea? That would impact 3.6 and 3.11 as well. I assume part of the amendment would change that from D to C and the E to D.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, yes, to clean up the paragraph letters, the amendment could include the command to the reviser to re-letter the paragraphs in sequence.
Good point, Representative Johnson.
I'm wide awake this morning.
I think the term is renumber accordingly. So, yes, again, I'll add that to the amendment, then strike those three lines and renumber the remaining lines in that section accordingly. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The oral amendment is approved. Representative Drazkowski, your bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I also sent around two handouts that deal with the state's noxious weed law, an outline the Department of Agriculture has about the weed law, how it works, and then also a list of the state's noxious weeds. And you'll see some weeds on there that I'm certain every member of the committee sees regularly in our road ditches on almost probably every roadway in the state in one place or another. But that's the bill, Mr. Chair. I'd encourage support for this bill. Again, it helps bring governments to follow the same laws that that individuals do. And I'd be, as I go through this process, I would be interested in finding out why indeed our governmental units are not following state law. Maybe it's because, and I did a bunch of research the last 2 days, there are sections in our noxious weed statutes. For instance, under 18.81, which is not in the bill, members, subdivision 2, local weed inspectors, it said local weed inspectors shall examine all lands, including highways, roads, alleys, and public ground. Also in section 18.83, which is also not in the bill, it says authorization for a person hired to enter upon land. It says the inspector or county designated employee may hire a person to control or eradicate noxious weeds if the person who owns the land, the person who occupies the land, or the person responsible for maintenance of public lands has failed to comply with an individual notice or with the published general notice. So, Mr. Chair, I think the intent is in statute for the public entities to follow the law, but our observations are very clear. They're not following the law. The private people are following the law because the weed inspectors are carrying out their duties, as the department has told us, with those people on private land. And I don't know exactly what the best way to get at these public agencies to bring them to follow the law. And that's why we've got the fine for the agency in the bill to maybe at least begin the discussion on how we get them to follow the law, Mr. Chair.
Question by Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Well, this is an interesting issue to me. I've been working the past year with a group of township supervisors and community members in Northfield and in the county, talking about infestation of wild parsnip, which I also know is in your district quite a bit, too. It's a complicated issue, and complicated by complications of the plant itself and complications that by mowing, you can actually spread the weed if you do it at the wrong time or if you do it at other things. So there's that problem, which makes it a difficult weed in itself to manage. The other thing, of course, is that townships and counties tell us they don't have the equipment to deal with some of these noxious weeds, and it's costly to maintain those areas. It's not a matter of just mowing it down, and it takes a plan. So one of the things that we've been doing over the course of the last year is trying to explore with the Department of Ag best practices and recommendations, and I think we're making good headway. We also have that group has also managed to successfully get a grant from the Department of Ag. There is now a grant that's funded. You know, there was for some time a grant offering, but with no funding in it. This last session, we put some funding in there primarily to deal with the Palmer Amaranth issue. You know, if we want our government entities to do this work, we need to make sure they have the ability to do it. I guess my question is, have you thought about some of those difficulties that our various public agencies might have in not only financially covering this mandate, but the ability to really show best practices and deal with the issues, because they are sometimes complex.
Representative Graskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Bly. Well, Representative Bly, yes, these weeds are in my district, and that's why I notice them. They're very likely in your district and the district of every member around the table, except, you know, maybe Representative Mahoney. You know, the wild parsnip example is a good example of why we need to change the law, Representative Bly. We have, as you and I know, it's propagated by seed. And when we have a law and statute that only allows those plants to be mowed in certain situations, or those road ditches to be mowed in certain situations long after the point in time in which that plant goes to seed, we actually have law that is hastening the propagation of that plant in our road ditches and beyond. So that's actually part of the problem, is that we've got law that encourages those plants to spread, and this bill addresses that. And the part about not having equipment, although on the surface it sounds like a very good argument, the noxious weed law actually says that the county can pay a check to someone who is hired to get rid of the weeds. So the weed inspector would say, you know, Joe's Weed Service, you know, I need you to go out and eradicate the weeds on Representative Poston's land because Representative Poston isn't, you know, getting rid of his noxious weeds. And then because he's already asked Representative Poston to remove him himself, and Representative Poston is at the cabin fishing or something. I don't know what he's doing. So when that happens, the weed inspector has the authority to actually hire somebody who has the equipment to go out and mow the weeds, and then the bill is paid by the county, and the county then turns around and puts the bill on Representative Poston's property tax so that when he returns from fishing, he recognizes that and actually pays the bill. That's how it works for private individuals. And Representative Bly, the way the law is written, as far as I can tell, that weed inspector can do the same thing for government and require them to mow their road ditches where the noxious weeds are all over the place right now, and can actually probably say, well, unit of government, if you don't have the equipment, we can send Joe's weed service out to your place as well, or to our taxpayers' place as well, and mow the road ditches on behalf of the taxpayers, and then turn around and have the county pay the bill, and then the county would somehow have to extract the money from that agency or road authority that failed to take care of the road ditch. But Representative Bly and members, that's not happening on the road authority side. The government is not taking care of the noxious weed problem. The way the law actually right now is written in law tells them they have to. And so here we have, we've got two different things happening. On the private side, the weed inspectors are doing the job with the private folks, and as we can see, the farmland is relatively clean of noxious weeds, but our road ditches are plumb full of them. So that's the problem we have, Mr. Chair and members.
And Representative Bly raises a good point about agencies maybe not having the funding or equipment to do this, but I just thought of a great idea. Let the farmers do it for nothing. I thought I'd get a response on that. Anyway, Representative Miller, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a real quick comment on that I'd like to add is that, you know, the cost of the state paying for this stuff, and the agencies paying for this, is one of the reasons why we need to be so careful about when we continue to purchase upland and put it into the public books. These are some of the things that you look into. We're not just losing property taxes when that happens, but we're also increasing costs. Because this is a responsibility, I think, on its face. Everyone in this room can agree. If there's a problem with the noxious weed, the people who have the land should address it. That's what we do in the state of Minnesota. So I think everyone can agree that this is something that the state should be responsible for. I just want to make one other quick comment. I want to thank you, Representative Drazkowski. And this isn't just a fairness thing. You know, if we have to do it, you know, we aren't going to pick favorites here. If one does it, the other one has to do it also. But an obvious thing is that we don't have walls at property lines. And one of the problems we have is when you have these noxious weeds growing in public lands, which are all over my district, the wind blows them. The wind blows them into private property, and then they have to pay for the cost of this. And so there's a cost burden to our landowners out there that are increased when their neighbors, which happens to be the state, are not taking care of their things. So I think that this is something that definitely needs to be addressed, and we need to figure out a way to have the state start taking responsibility for the land that they control.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Drazkowski. I'm kind of amazed to see you trying to require government to spend more money, because it's really kind of not your typical place. But this bill likely is a fairly costly bill to counties, to Department of Transportation, and the Department of Ag. And I certainly hope we don't go down another permitting issue, because I've sat through quite a few of them already, Mr. Chair. Many of the other committees I go through, we actually take care of the problem and then be done with it and don't have it come back year after year after year. But I'm just wondering, Representative Drazkowski, what do the counties think of your bill, MnDOT, Department of Ag, and if any of those folks want to actually testify whether they support your bill or not, whether it's the Association of Counties or the departments.
We do have testifiers, but answer the question, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. You know, as a matter of fact, the bill would amount to more spending by those government units, but, of course, that money, Representative Mahoney, as you'll notice, is directed to the road fund. So, essentially, we would have an earmarking of those funds for something, and maybe it would come out of one section of their budget and go into one that actually builds and maintains roads. So I don't have all the answers, Representative Mahoney, but I'm very frustrated with the fact that we have private individuals that are following the law with the encouragement of a very large and as far as I can tell, successful group of weed inspectors. They're together bringing this law to be followed on the private side, but it's not happening on the public side. And so, again, I don't have all the answers, but this is a first attempt at it. And this one does do some of what the chair suggested. If you look at Section 2 of the bill or Section 3 of the bill, it provides private landowners the flexibility to mow in the road ditches. And as we know, so if you are a farmer and you want to mow the road ditches, your incentive is the hay that's there. And in order for you to have dairy quality hay, you have to mow that hay before the 1st of June, usually about the 25th or 27th of May, in order to get dairy quality hay, and then monthly thereafter in order to maintain the quality you need. And as a matter of fact, what we have in statute now says August 1st is the first time you can mow it. My dad used to call that type of material sticks, Representative Mahoney, because that's all that you have right then is sticks. And, of course, seed that wants to shatter, and as Representative Bly and I were talking earlier, propagate the weed further in the road ditch and then beyond. So therein lies our problem, members.
Representative Mahoney?
Well, that opens up another can of pollinators. So, Representative Drazkowski, I remember some of your more memorable speeches on the floor, and one of them was last year about money for road construction and road maintenance, and now you're just taking money away from road maintenance and construction in order to mow ditches. It is an amazing example of how we can sometimes turn on a dime to encourage one activity or another, and I've done it too. So I'm just impressed. So now, not only Ag, MnDOT, and counties, but maybe ducks and or pheasants forever or whatever it is, because I'm told that they try to nest in those particular areas. So now you want to cut down the weeds or the road ditches before the pheasants are hatched. So, again, does anybody want to? I'll just wait for the testifiers to come down. But I just wanted to point out the ability to switch on a dime. I appreciate that, sir.
Representative Bly, we have three testifiers: Mr. Johnson, Mr. Nancy Dobenberger, and Chris Cowan. So, okay, let's call down Mr. Craig Johnson. And Nancy, you're on deck. Good morning. Identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Have spoken with the author about our concerns with this bill. The only section that affects cities in this is Section 1 of the bill, but it has significant impacts on cities. So for those of you who aren't aware, in cities, not just weed management is still required. The statutorily designated weed inspector is the mayor of each city. Unless they have staffing that they can delegate that to, they are the weed inspector, and must be responsible for that. If they do have staffing, they very quickly delegate that. However, the current law is that cities within their jurisdiction, and it's in the section that's in front of you in Section 1, the deleted language in line 1.10 says cities shall cause the weeds to be managed appropriately. This removes that and says the cities shall do it. So that means every easement of every alley and every street, the city will now have to go on to your property and remove any weeds that someone reports are there, and it will be their cost, not yours, to do it. So the current process is if your property is found to have a weed issue or a lawn that hasn't been mowed because you've been gone for a month or any of those things, it's as was explained earlier, we have a nuisance law process. You would be notified. You would be given time to respond as a property owner. If you failed to do so, there would be an administrative action that was begun with a hearing available for you to challenge it. And if all of that went through, then the city could hire someone to go in and deal with the mowing or whatever the other problem was, and it would be a special assessment onto your property. Under this, you have no more responsibility. It's now the city's responsibility. So there would be no special assessment to recollect those funds back. It would just be the city having to pay to do it for anyone who chose not to do it on their property. So, Mr. Chair, our role as a local government with weed management is already unfunded, despite the very nice start on putting a little funds into that last year that the legislature made. That's not near enough to get down to the city level. That barely touches counties that have an urgent Palmer amaranth problem. We really could not afford this in a reasonable manner. It would take significant existing city resources away from other priority issues or require significant property taxes to have more staffing to deal with this and the equipment to deal with this. So we respectfully do not support Section 1 of this legislation. I'm happy to answer questions, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Johnson, just a comment or question. The thing I've always thought was uniquely not workable with weed laws, by the time you go through your current regimen of notices and time, the weeds have all gone to seed. Yep. And that to me is a thing that hasn't really worked. So I agree there's a problem with noxious weeds going to seed, and the process needs to be speeded up. I don't know if this does it, but as you comment, there's a cost there. But right now, the appeal and the warning thing, I don't think works very well because of the time lapse it takes. Any other questions? Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just comment on what you just said. Successful weed management is obviously done before the fact and not after the fact, and all of these things are structured for after the fact type of responses. So by definition, they are not going to function or do it. They're simply there to please the person who wants to complain about it. I mean, we might as well say that. That's its only function. As to getting rid of the weeds and that sort of thing, I don't know if Representative Joskowski's structure actually does get in front of weed growth in any way. It just says after the fact, again, you know, we'll either get fined or, you know, those kinds of things. I really would find greater substance in some sort of structure, advised or however, where we would be in front of this problem. And there really is a difference between weed management on open fields, probably road ditches, versus in the city, because in the city you're talking about the concrete medians that exist. They're just resplendent with weeds, particularly in about a month. There will be the first crop of dandelions that come up. So I think that this is untenable, but mostly it's untenable, just for your point, is that this is all after the fact, and it will always be chasing the tail of the dog. So sorry to not have a solution or a question.
Any other questions for Mr. Johnson? No. Thank you. Nancy Dalmenberger, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Dobenberger, and I'm with MnDOT. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Engineering Services Division. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this bill today. So I was the person who led the public engagement and stakeholder group effort on mowing and haying in the right-of-way permit changes over this last year. And MnDOT has some serious concerns with this bill. I'd like to first note that MnDOT does have a vegetation management plan and program, and we do the best we can within the resources we have. Speaking with our maintenance forces, anytime a county ag inspector comes out and says that we have an issue with some noxious weeds, we have responded. And, in fact, we've gone out and done some presentations to county ag inspectors to inform them of our vegetation management program, how we handle noxious weeds, and who to contact if they see that we're lacking success in certain areas. And if they're not seeing as much of a response as they had hoped to, who to go to up the chain in order to get that response that's required. This House File 3150 authorizes mowing and haying by a third party without a permit, and that can degrade roadside vegetation and protected species that occur within roadside habitat. It assumes that mowing improves motorist safety, and MnDOT does indeed perform mowing for safety. However, new plant growth that results from too frequent of mowing can attract more deer to the roadside, and that can pose a safety hazard. Section 2E allows bales to remain in the right-of-way for 10 days, but it does not include language about the location in the right-of-way where those bales can be stored during that time. And that could create hazards close to the road for motorists. And MnDOT has promoted the removal of bales within 7 days, and leaving bales in place longer than that could kill existing vegetation underneath those bales. I'd like to take a moment to talk about some of the changes MnDOT made or is currently making to our permit process as a result of the public input and stakeholder engagement. So just last year, as a part of that, we did update our permit application system. So now there's an online submission form for that permit for those who prefer to just go online and submit an application that way. However, for those who prefer to come into the district office and have someone lead them through the permit process, we still provide that service, or even the printing out the permit online, filling it out, and then going into the district office with that or mailing it in. So those different methods of obtaining the permit are all available now. Just a few other changes I'd like to mention. We removed the requirement to designate the state of Minnesota as the third party insured with the insurance and modified the minimum insurance requirement to reflect change from mandatory to just recommended minimum limit of $1 million per coverage, or in coverage per occurrence, excuse me. The security deposit was something that our district permit staff has had the ability to require or waive in certain instances. We're going to keep doing that, but now with the intention that for abutting landowners, they will be waiving that security deposit unless there have been some past issues or if other issues arrive. Otherwise, they'll be waiving that security deposit. That was the deposit that was typically in the form of a check that we'd just hold till the end of the mowing season and give back if there were no issues. Safety requirements, we had already lessened them a little over a year ago. Now we've just retained the requirement to have a high visibility vest or shirt, as well as a flashing light, so no longer requiring the strobe light on equipment out there, but rather just a flashing light. And then also developing a long-term permit, and that's something we're currently working on. That would be in place for the 2019 mowing season, but a multi-year permit. And that needs changes in this new online permitting system, so that's why it's going to take just a little bit longer. But that we plan to have in place for 2019. And also we've given priority to abutting landowners, so if they apply before March 1st, they have the first rights to mow and hay in front of their property. And then those coming in after that would be considered on a first-come, first-served basis. So those were some changes that we made as a result of that public input process or are in the process of making. This bill, 3150, removes the permit requirement, so that takes away the communication tool that provides MnDOT the knowledge of operations taking place in our right-of-way that could affect safe highway operations. This same communication tool also provides permit requesters an avenue to receive knowledge of upcoming operations that MnDOT has planned for the same location, such as upcoming construction projects or maintenance work that's going to be done out there that season. And while this bill takes away our ability to permit those operations, it doesn't address the date restrictions that are in current law, which was a big concern and a topic in the stakeholder group that we had talked through. Section 3A language excuses abutting landowners who mow the highway right-of-way for purposes of lawn maintenance from the need to get a permit, and MnDOT does support that. But with that, the language should also describe responsibilities, requirements, and the liability that one accepts by mowing in the highway right-of-way. With that, thank you for letting me testify. I'll stay for questions.
Ms. Doppenberger, you mentioned the series of meetings this past winter. I was at one of them. You know, I've always thought the biggest piece of contention was this cutting date. You know, currently it's August 1st. Was there any consensus of coming to a compromise on that, or where do you see that landing or being right now?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I had mentioned, there was a lot of discussion on that, as you had recognized as well. There were different options that were discussed for changes in the date. We had interests on, of course, both the agricultural side as well as the environmental side. Some of the environmental comments and concerns that came up about the date were such that the current date in state law doesn't necessarily suit all wildlife who would be out there in the highway right-of-way. So a compromise alternative that was discussed basically at the last stakeholder meeting was to provide flexibility with those dates, so not have a date restriction at all, but with that, leave some of the hay that would be mowed out there, or the vegetation that would be mowed for hay out there. So it was a take some, leave some type of concept, then allowing for flexibility in dates if some of that vegetation is left.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question on one of the big concerns that we hear continuously is we're going to leave that vegetation in the right-of-way so we can hatch pheasants. Has the department looked at exactly where pheasants are native in Minnesota? I happen to live in an area where the only time we see them is in a cage, and there's a whole lot of hundreds of miles north of me to the Canadian border. So there's seems to be a little disconnect there with approaching this on a statewide basis. We just don't see any pheasants where I live, and so I get a little perturbed about the we're going to protect the pheasants in the right of way when all we got is weeds and a little jack pine.
Ms. Doppenberger.
Mr. Chair and Representative, those discussions did indeed take place during the stakeholder group, and a representative from the Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever had talked about the use of the right-of-way by ground nesting birds and that they are indeed out there. However, then other stakeholders had commented that they hadn't been seeing any out there either. So I just wanted to share with you what I had heard. The question that was posed to me is really outside of my purview area and probably better for the Department of Natural Resources. As an engineer, don't have that specific background.
Follow-up, Representative
Lowe. Just a comment, and one of the things that we do in our communities is, particularly at the county level, is we have community groups that adopt miles and miles of road ditches. And every spring and through the summer, we go through with bags and we pick up all the trash. And guess what? And I participate in it myself. We don't see these famous bird nests that everybody else, I guess, I don't know how they do this, but, you know, we've not disturbed any birds, not found any eggs, not found any nests, that, you know, and I'm not talking about a couple hundred yards. I'm talking about many, many miles of a lot of people. What we do find is tin cans and other things that don't belong there. So, again, I think we continue to work on something that, frankly, isn't really solving much of anything. And that comment about protein and forage for livestock is absolutely critical. You're just wasting diesel fuel, adding unnecessary pollutants to the air if you're out there mowing stuff in August and September, because at best it makes bedding.
Question? Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And we, you know, this issue keeps floating around. First of all, I want to thank you and the group that you had. I, as you know, attended the public meeting, which was really interesting at South Central College. And then the next morning, I was able to attend the stakeholder group. And this is clearly a complex issue. And we hear comments like Representative Lewick's, but, you know, I think you also heard comments from other folks who argue that this is critical habitat. I guess my question would be to the chair or to the audience maybe, is there somebody here that can talk about the benefits of the ditches, especially in my part of the state, where there is less wild land than there is up in your neck of the woods, Representative Lewick? I know the Pheasants Forever feels strongly about this and does feel that, in certainly in pheasant country in southwestern Minnesota, that there is value to the ditches. And I've heard that. I heard that testimony in North Mankato. I also know that pollinators, the people who, beekeepers, consider the ditch a critical source, and getting to that date of August 1st is important to them. My point is this is a complex issue that has to be determined, you know, that has to take in all accounts on that. I don't know if we have time for the testimony now, but I think there's plenty of folks that in the state that feel very strongly about the value of that as habitat, and it needs to be considered. I know we're looking a little later on towards the bill on to delay the rule. I think there's some value in that myself, because I think this is a complex process that we've made a lot of strides in the meetings that were held last summer. But I'm not so sure we've come to that consensus or that agreement on how to do it. I guess maybe this is for you, Mr. Chair. How do you want to handle this at the Ag Committee? This also involves the Transportation Committee. But I hope you recognize that though some people don't see the pheasant eggs in the ditch, others do. And so how do you plan to deal with it?
Well, this bill is going to be laid over, Representative, and there's more bills coming. And I think a lot of us would agree that in our travels back home, this one issue comes up time after time, and people are passionate about it on both sides, as you mentioned, on both sides. And I kind of quit talking about the feed value of the grass, because a lot of folks don't understand that or don't get it. And I think it's a safety issue that you mentioned, like having it cut or not cut for deer or whatever. But if I drove a motorcycle, I would not want grass 2 feet tall up along the road shoulder for animals coming up and banging into my motorcycle. So, yeah, there's different ways to look at it. It's going to be difficult to come to a compromise, which makes everybody feel good about this. But thank you for your work. Well, here goes my voice this past winter. And we're going to have to keep working on it, but we're going to hear more. We're going to hear more bills. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. One of the things that I learned in my meeting with constituents in my district is that this can be, there are local solutions to this issue. And as has been testified, it's different across the state. And it may be a really good approach to try to address these things locally. We can, as legislators, convene just such a meeting where we bring together various levels of government and citizens and talk about it. We've had discussions in our group talking about the wild parsnip problem with people concerned about pollinator habitat and pheasants as well. And it's really an interesting effort to try to have these folks come together. And I think the being able to use what small funds there are available through the Department of Ag to get a grant to continue that discussion and planning is really useful. And, you know, I guess I would say maybe a better approach to this rather than the kind of heavy-handed idea that you make government do what it's supposed to do regardless of the results would be to convene more local meetings where you involve MnDOT and the Department of Ag and others and try to talk through what would work best for controlling weeds and protecting habitat and meeting the needs of farmers as well. So sometimes addressing things locally can be a very positive thing.
Good comments. We have two more bills on the agenda, so we have one more testifier here, Chris Cowan, Pesticide Action Network.
Mr. Chair, if I could, while they're coming up.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I think, members, this is an area that the legislature's got to lead with some sort of policy. We've got two different types of objectives here. One is, as you point out, Mr. Chair, the safety of our roadways. And the closer the tall grass gets to the road, the quicker the deer jumps through the windshield or the motorcycle. Yeah. And for those concerned about wildlife, Mr. Chair, I saw another eagle feasting on a dead deer on the shoulder of road the other day, and I wonder how many of those get killed by passing cars as they're trying to lift up off of that deer. So the question is more about maybe what type of wildlife we want to protect or enhance or whatever we're going to do. I would also remind members that we buy 10,000 acres of land a year with legacy money, and so I would encourage those people who want to grow birds and bees and butterflies to find that land, because we add 10,000 acres every year, and it's not next to the roadway, which works out really well if you go to that land, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Cohen, good morning. Identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Chris Cowan, and I am a contract lobbyist with the Pesticide Action Network. I don't have any easy answers for the problems that are being wrestled with today, and I have a lot of respect for folks who are trying to come up with the answers. I did have concern that the press is playing this up, kind of trying to make a division about Twin Cities agenda and catering to the Twin Cities. And being that I live in St. Paul, I wanted to address that a little bit and put that in the context of what we're talking about today. The one thing that I'd like folks to do, if they haven't already, Google Pesticide Action Network and see what the organization is about. You may be surprised. We're not just city folks pointing our fingers at our neighbors that work hard in greater Minnesota. They do raise a lot of issues that address the concerns of farmers and talk about pesticide use and how it's used, and is it appropriate, and is it helping, dicamba being an issue this year, and then also the role of pesticides in the spread of superweeds such as Palmer amaranth. So I would invite folks to take a look at that if you haven't already. And, of course, one of the concerns that the Pesticide Action Network has is protecting pollinators, and I totally respect what it takes for, especially someone going into farming, how much land costs and how much money you have to spend on equipment and what the market's doing with the prices on commodities. So folks who are in a corn, soybean rotation, that there's been easier times, certainly, and there's a lot of prohibitive costs. So when somebody comes along and says, hey, and starts pointing at things about what they're doing, I can understand they're being concerned. And I was at the meeting in Marshall, and I was at the one in Rochester talking about the ditches and the mowing, and I understand those concerns. But at the same time, as we try to wrestle with these things, the rusty patch bumblebee. Now, I think the rusty patch bumblebee is more than just a cute little bumblebee that a lot of people haven't seen. But folks who study this, entomologists, they used to be all over the place. And now they're about gone. And that happened in a little less than 20 years. So what's going on with that? I mean, so there are folks who are trying to use what tools they have available to try to wrestle with these situations. Same thing with the monarch butterfly. When the populations have declined as drastically as they have, what is going on? And I would say that in some cases there just aren't the forage areas that there used to be. So some folks, maybe mistakenly, I don't know, started saying, hey, wait a minute, what about the ditches? And fairly quickly people found out, hey, wait a minute, there's a law that's been on the books here for 30 years. Maybe we have something here. But I support a lot of the folks who are trying to, from our point of view, trying to work on this issue. But the ditches are... they're right next to the fields, and for folks, if you haven't had a chance, there's a group that got together called the Corn Dust Research Consortium, and this talks about pesticide use, especially neonics on corn seed, and when it spreads. So it really does bring into play, are the ditches a good place to expect critters to live? I mean, that's true. But I would ask you to look at this and look at the folks who made up this group. These are industry people. These are not environmentalists. And they talk about the impact of corn dust in areas such as ditches. And I just want to say that my wife and I, we live right by the state fairgrounds. Every year, all of Minnesota comes to our neighborhood. We're glad to have everybody. And we own our house, and in front of my house is a sidewalk, and there's a tree, and there's a lamp. And those are all things that I have to pay for, and they're for everybody's enjoyment, and they're on my land. So city folks have to live with regulation, too, and I hope there's ways to come to resolution on these difficult issues and do so in a way that protects pollinators, which ultimately protects farmers. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Cowan. See no comments. Final thoughts on your bill, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've enjoyed the debate and discussion today, and I'm certain there's more to come forward, but I think we need to make a public policy decision about what is the purpose of our roadways. Mr. Chair, members, the Minnesota Department of Transportation, in its mission statement, says that our roadways are put together to move people and move them safely. And that part, Mr. Chair, is getting lost. We need to make a decision in this area within the next probably couple of years or so. But look forward to more discussion on this, and thank you.
I missed the question comment from Representative Miller. Quickly.
Very quickly, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say that we've heard from the cities, we've heard from MnDOT, and we've heard from the Pesticide Action Network. It's real important to remember that we have not heard from the landowners. And I emphasize the word, we say that word very quickly, these are the land owners in the United States of America, the land owners. And we are pushing them around with government telling them what they need to do, and I think we need to take a very sober, close look at that. Thank you.
Very good. Good comment. So, again, House File 3150 is being laid over. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sosinski, you're here. Let's get your bill up and get it rolling. And Derek and Mind, we have 21 minutes left on the committee today. This House File 4008. This bill is not in our possession. Therefore, this is just an informational hearing. Representative, good morning. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is kind of the based off of a number of conversations that have happened throughout the state, but also within the ag community. There are still a lot of questions, a lot of frustration with the process in which we move forward and on the results of that process. We believe that the department and others do need time, and agriculture and rural Minnesota do need time to also work out some differences that I believe still divide us on this particular issue. And rather than move forward in conversations, you know, essentially this bill just continues the moratorium to April 30th, 2019.
You have a couple of testifiers, I believe.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I do believe there are a few folks that would like to come on behalf of this bill. So,
very good.
Also, appreciate the opportunity to come before this committee for an informational hearing.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good morning. Identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And just we do support this approach, House File 4008, and appreciate the other legislators that are working on this issue. Farmers Union did participate in the stakeholder process. And as for ag policy, you know that I think everybody understands the importance for farmers to control noxious weeds, maintain safety, and obtain quality forage. Representative Drazkowski laid that out very nice. And the August 1st date is can be very problematic. I also wanted to kind of talk about, you know, this bill doesn't get rid of the permit altogether. It just says it can't be enforced. And so going forward, what happened is the report that hopefully you all have or the chairs have, if you haven't had it, you should look at the report. It came out March 1st. We have very short deadlines. And I just don't feel, our organization doesn't feel that by Friday that we can come up with a reasonable answer for the date. And so going forward, farmers would still maybe get a permit this year. On average, MnDOT would say 140 farmers or landowners got a permit. Last year when all the hubbub happened, I think 363 people applied for a permit. So there was a big increase in people applying for the permit. And so that was the other point I wanted to make. We are making progress. The DNR has a program, too, called Roadsides for Habitat that they are working on, that they have hired a coordinator for. And, again, just want to really highlight for the Ag Policy Committee the importance of the quality forage, is, but also remember that the forage is also ditch quality hay. I go to the auction. I went to the auction Saturday, you know, and you can see the prices of ditch hay is typically a lot less, and it has things in it, and you know what you're buying. And so, but think about, on average, when I asked our farmers, how many bales do they get off their ditch? You know, and I was surprised they'd say, you know, 2 to 20 round bales, maybe a couple hundred square bales. But you really want to do the math on that, too. And so think of a round bale running anywhere from $20 to $30 for ditch hay. You know, and then, you know, you can look at the map. So I am pleased that MnDOT is working on improving the permit. But a lot of the things that they're working on in the permit, like the long-term permit, is not ready to go. The report also calls for a phased-in implementation of the permit, which is in the report, which this would help. And so I encourage your consideration as this moves forward. I know it's not officially in front of the committee, but appreciate you taking time today. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Peterson. Is Ashley Coles here? I didn't see her.
I saw her.
Okay. Ashley and Chris? Good morning.
Good morning. Ashley Coles with the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association. And Chris Wollum was not able to make it in today because of snow out in western Minnesota. But I guess from the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association, we reflect some of the similar comments that Tom just made. But mostly we just wanted to go on record saying that we support the one-year moratorium to continue the work of the working group.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Coles. Questions from members or anybody else in the audience? Seeing none, final comments, Representative Swadzinski.
No, I appreciate the opportunity again. You know, this conversation has been frustrating at times. I know a lot of the folks within the working group have expressed frustration on the weight of their comments. You know, being, you know, Representative Miller did speak to the fact that, you know, farmers across the state have been maintaining these ditches for decades upon decades upon decades, picking up diapers, bottles, tires, fixing the ditches when there's a semi goes in the ditch, doing all those things, trapping pockets, the rest, to make those ditches safer and smarter. You know, just last week, Abate came to the Capitol, and that was one of the issues that they spoke about. They're exceptionally concerned. They weren't engaged in this issue, but they are. And you say that this is about, you mentioned that yourself, Mr. Chair. You know, 70% of accidents when it comes to motorcyclists are because of animal hits. If we move forward and get away from this practice of what's currently being in place and which has worked quite well across the state, my argument is that's going to increase, and that's going to cost lives from a safety perspective, but also fix something that's not broken. And this bill, I think, is an ultimate first step. Draskowski had a lot of interesting ideas with his bill as well, and we'd appreciate this conversation continuing to happen. So thank you.
Representative Bly, what are your comments?
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Chair Anderson. I just wanted to bring up, there was in the packet an amendment that I was going to introduce your bill, but because we don't have possession, I imagine it's difficult for me to do that. I was bringing that on behalf of Representative Bernardi, who I believe has been in discussion with you about her concerns, primarily about, again, the pollinator issue and some other things about permitting and moving forward. So I just wanted to speak briefly to that. I know that you're working with her, and she's been talking with you about the possibility of a pilot perhaps in the metro area. I think you might have gathered from some of the comments I was making about my own experience, too, that there are other ways about talking about this very issue, and including folks from pollinator groups or others that are important. There are a lot of people that care about these ditches and what happens with them, and we need to be respectful of all the folks there. So members can look at the amendment and see that it's there. I don't, in the interest of time, I won't, you know, belabor the issue, but I just wondered if you had any comments you'd like to make about your conversations with Representative Bernardi or what might happen there.
Sure. No.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bly. No, I appreciate Representative Bernardi as a good representative. Her husband is actually grew up in my district, so Bernardi's a good name in our neck of the woods. But, you know, in reality, you know, I asked her, I said, what other groups are you bringing a part of this? And obviously it represents a point of view. And, you know, oftentimes when we're having this conversation, you know, the foundation of the argument is certain people are excluded from all these rules, whether it be the date, whether it be the mowing, whether it be the permit, whether it be the rest, whether that be folks that live in the metro, whether people live in town out in rural parts of the state. And, you know, I think a good perspective is, you know, part of the rules and part of some of the bills that she was talking about, where we would just want to exclude 100 feet on every other's driveway so that people can mow. Well, you know, that's an issue of politics. And whether you live in a metropolitan area along a state highway, you're exempt to these rules. And, you know, we had the young man from the spray group or whatever just a bit ago. You know, he talked about he lives close to the Snelling Avenue and the rest. And if that happened to be a state highway in city, those same rules would not apply to him. And because it doesn't necessarily look good in the front yard. You know, cities have rules and regulations on those things. And, you know, my argument is, you know, we've been farming this land for 130 years in some instances. We were there before the state highway system was. And I think a lot of the arguments that were made back when the easements were purchased and sued for and condemned were that, hey, you know what, there are certain areas that we're not going to, so don't resist this. It'll be kind of fine. It'll be a good source of hay. You can't tell me that those conversations didn't happen with landowners decades ago. And, you know, this does go back on some of those previously wink and a nod conversations that may have happened with landowners who are affected by this. We all agree that transportation is an exceptionally big part of getting our goods to market, but also from a safety, but also from a looks point of view. I think last time this bill was talked about last year, a lot of members talked about how, you know, they're judged on the quality of their ditches. Other landowners talk to them about, you know, hey, I'd like to rent to you because I understand the way you treat your ditch is a reflection of who you are and how it looks and that perception. And folks are exceptionally worried about what that's going to mean to them as individual producers, what it's going to mean for the safety of those people passing upon the roadway. And these are part of that conversation. Pollinators are part of that conversation. But I don't want that to nullify the realities of history, of what's been going on throughout the state successfully. And he talked a little bit about, you know, that pollinators have taken a huge deduction in the last 20 years. These ditches have been mowed for 80. The ditches aren't the problem.
We have one bill left, but the final comment.
Just one comment. I agree. For some folks, they look at some of the ditches as a solution to some of the problem, too. Sure. So, and I'm very glad that you're working with Representative Bernardi, and hopefully you can move something forward in transportation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Final comments, Representative? I guess not. Okay. One bill left on the agenda, House File 3965. Representative Vice Chair Backer. We saved the best for last.
You say so.
Representative Backer, please present your bill. And again, this is informational hearing only.
Yeah, Chair Anderson and members, really what this bill does, we've heard today really why I drafted up this bill is because, as we can see, there is a lot of concerns about ditch mowing, and it needs to be completely vetted through the process and ratified by the House and the Senate. That's what we're here for. I'm concerned that not all avenues are being vetted, and that's why I introduced this bill. It was said, you know, as an EMT, I volunteer as an EMT for a community. I've done that for 25 years. and tall grass on the side of the roads is a safety concern. We have a producer concern. We have a landowner concern. So that's why I have this bill, and hopefully it will help create a win-win situation. That's all I have, Chair Anderson.
Very good. Questions? Ms. Dobenberger, I think you're still around here. Can I ask you one question, please, in a more general sense, not necessarily on this bill? And thank you for staying around. I know this is really interesting, but thank you very much. So my question, ma'am, is if we don't do anything this year as a legislature, what can MnDOT do statutorily if we do nothing this year? Ms. Dobenberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Nancy Dobenberger. I'm with MnDOT. And what would happen if nothing different happens during this legislative session? The moratorium that's in place that was passed last session would expire on April 30th.
Okay.
And as Mr. Peterson with the Farmers Union mentioned, that statute didn't restrict MnDOT's ability to issue permits, so we're still issuing permits. And as I mentioned in my earlier testimony, we made some changes to that process. We will continue to make those changes as planned, but that moratorium expires on April 30th, so with any permits issued or any work in the right-of-way, we continue to manage our right-of-way as we have in the past, where if we saw an issue where there was noncompliance with the permits or with the requirements of the permits, then we would go out, talk with those who are doing work in the right-of-way about the work that they're doing and what they need to do to comply with the permit and what MnDOT's expectations are with that.
So I guess where I'm going with this, if nothing is forthcoming here, could MnDOT start to enforce the cutting date more strictly, or and maybe you can't speak for the department, but where do you see that going if there is no moratorium going forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if there's no moratorium going forward, as I mentioned, MnDOT would continue to issue permits for work in the right-of-way. And when it comes to mowing and haying work, that is currently only allowed by statute from August 1st to August 31st, that's what our permits then allow, is for mowing and haying during that time frame. So if we were to see, or someone would report to MnDOT, they see somebody out there mowing outside of that time frame, we would go out and talk to the person performing the work about the work that they're doing outside of what was allowed.
So if somebody does the right thing, applies, and gets a permit, are they then restricted to cutting only in that August window?
That is correct. With the Minnesota State Statute 161.232, that current law only allows for mowing during the month of August, outside of safety reasons.
Yeah, and I don't mean to lead you on, but, you know, that's been on the books for, somebody mentioned, 30 years. It hasn't really been enforced. Do you see that policy changing?
Mr. Chair, are you referring to
the August 1st cutting date?
Well, that August 1st cutting date would have to be changed in statute for MnDOT to change our practices around what we permit.
Okay. Okay, we'll just leave it there. Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to make sure we're clear on cutting for safety purposes. Would you explain to the committee and to the public about the ability to cut the first segment of the roadway and all year round for safety purposes?
Ms. Dobenberger.
Mr. Chair and Representative, so MnDOT does what we call a safety cut, and we'll do that early in the season, and that is directly adjacent to the road, adjacent to the shoulder of the road. It's one swath, essentially, of cut to reduce the vegetation down to a size that's more conducive to sight distance and other safety-related issues. We monitor that then throughout the season, throughout the growing season, to determine when we need to go back out there and mow that again. And in cases where others are cutting our highway right-of-way, then if that's already done, we don't need to mow there again. But if it's not done, we will likely be out there multiple times during the season.
Follow up?
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. I'm terrible with names. Ms.
Dobenberger.
Okay. I still won't get it right, so I apologize. Deputy Commissioner or Assistant Commissioner?
Assistant Commissioner.
Assistant Commissioner. I'll get it right eventually. Assistant Commissioner, how does MnDOT intend to enforce this August 30th with those that are permitted, or I suppose not permitted? But in any case, do they plan to enforce this August 1st date, mowing date?
Ms. Dobenberger.
Mr. Chair and Representative, so past practice on that with that law, which has been in place for quite some time, as you've indicated, is if we see someone out mowing the highway right-of-way outside of that August time frame, what I understand from our maintenance folks, our permit technicians, which issue those permits, is that they will stop and ask the person performing the work if they have a permit, and of course, typically, if it's outside of that time frame, they should not have a permit for mowing there at that time. That's how enforcement's taken place. We communicate then that there is the state statute in place that only allows mowing during the month of August, and we have a permitting process, and we do that education on site when we see this sort of thing happening. So if I can answer your question, this is how I anticipate we would continue moving forward with the current state statute around the dates as well as our current permitting process.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. So this law that's been on the books for 30 years, that has been the enforcement practices for the past 30 years, and you do not anticipate there being a higher level of enforcement for perhaps fines or other sorts of measures. And if there are going to be future things like that, who do you intend is going to enforce this? Is this going to be MnDOT? Is this going to be the state police? Is this going to be county sheriffs? This is a progression that I think MnDOT is anticipating moving forward to. Basically, if you mow before August 1st, we're going to stop you in some sort of way. So what's the intended progression of this? Who's going to enforce this in the future?
Ms. Dobenberger.
Mr. Chair and Representative, at this time it's our intention that we continue to manage it as we have been. So in instances where we discuss with the person out in the right-of-way who's doing the work about our permit process and what's allowed by statute and our requirements, if they are not in compliance with that, well, certainly we ask them to please be in compliance with that. If after discussing that they're still out of compliance, that would, one, from our agency's standpoint, be a reason to not issue a permit in the future. If it was the case where that person would continue to be out there against our asking them to not be, and we needed to get law enforcement involved, we would talk with local law enforcement or state patrol if we weren't able to have the local law enforcement help us out with a situation like that.
Okay. Representative Dillon?
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions from anybody here, any final comments? Representative Backer?
No, thank you.
Okay. And again, your bill is informational only. That was House File 3965. Thanks, members, for your diligence today. With that, the meeting is